It's Cofield and Company.
We only have one rule on this team. What is that rule?
ELE.
That's right, ELE. What does ELE stand for?
Everybody love everybody.
Everybody love everybody.
With Steve Cofield.
Well, I don't need to shave because it don't grow in right here and right here.
Now you're telling me that you were so ingrained with white trash DNA that your facial hair actually grows in on its own, all white trashy like that?
On ESPN Las Vegas.
Oh yeah, give me your booze. I am nourished by your hatred.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
All right, here we go on a Monday. Cofield and Company, Steve, Big Mac, Chrissy. Hell of a weekend to recap. Fun Sunday to recap. But I'm kind of blown away by the Tiger Woods adulation. I don't know why I am. And the 11 years flew by. It's pretty crazy. But Tiger is everywhere. We're going to hit on a lot of Tiger around 3:45 today. But one of the themes of Tiger winning is that the sports books got crushed. When you read these stories, right? So Tiger Woods wins the Masters yesterday. There was a dude who came into town, put $85,000 on Tiger Woods at 12-1 odds. So he's going to collect over $1 million on his win. When you see the sportsbook directors talking about the loss they endured, and they come off as a bit whiny. Is it just being a bit whiny, or is it actually a master stroke of marketing?
Well, okay.
What do you think?
Marketing-wise, I think, honestly, I feel like they're just doing their job. Okay, so first of all, when these sportsbook directors, whoever you have on a show, you're asking them, how'd you do? You're interviewing them, and they're like, we did terrible. We got crushed. That's facts. Are they weeping? Are they, well, you know, I really wasn't expecting it. Now my whole life is turned upside down and I had a Mercedes and now I got to get a Civic. No, I mean, they're not complaining. They're reporting. So, and again, I mean, I get like the FanDuels and the East Coast online books giving back the AAF money, right? Like there's certain marketing ploys that I understand. I don't understand. When you say marketing, do you mean the fact that, like, hey, casinos actually lose? Look at us. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, you can kick the crap out of a sports book. These things happen. Now you have to have $85,000
right,
to cash in at $1.19 million, but you could have got them at 12-1 before the tournament. You could have got them at 6-1. We're talking about Tiger Woods. 6-1 yesterday.
I would imagine it's a little bit of both. But again, well, I'm just telling you my general, and maybe this is a profession I'm in, right? I'm a little skewed there. But when I hear that stuff, I just view it as them responding to questions that are asked.
Yeah.
Reporting.
The great thing about this dude who won, so one of the newbies to the space, dude Ben at ESPN, tweeted out, and it was actually 14-1. James Aducci is the guy behind the $85,000 bet. He's getting a check from William Hill, $1.19 million. And says it was his first sports bet ever. Cynical Twitter is not buying it.
Yeah, no.
This guy from ESPN said, flew out to Vegas to make the bet, was turned down by two sports books. He says, amazing. Every response is, his first ever sports bet was $85,000. Okay, sure.
Listen.
Definitely not his money if it's his first bet, which means he was placing it on behalf of someone else. Someone else joking, is his nickname by any chance Biff? When you say he flew in, did you ask if it was a DeLorean? Of course, Back to the Future references. Someone else actually rips him, says, should have shopped, could have gotten Tiger at 18-1. All right.
It's just never enough. You don't. I mean, face value. He's not repping anybody. Some not bigger name, a bigger handicapper, a Floyd Mayweather type. It's just him. It's just, what'd you say his name was? I don't want to set you up, but whatever his name was, right?
James Aducci.
Okay, James Aducci. If we're going off the idea that James Aducci, this man who has never bet, just face value, that he dropped $85,000 on his first sports bet, there is no way that actually happened. That is not possible.
Also seems unlikely that if he had never bet before that a book would take $85,000 in action.
That too.
That's a weird one.
But here's another idea. If a man is able to procure enough wealth in his life that he can drop $85K on a singular bet, do you think he didn't get to that way by being extremely, you know, frugal? You'd have to think he has a ton of cash. And you get what I'm saying? Like, I don't buy for one second that a frugal individual with that type of money that worked their way to a place to spend $85K on one bet would then just fly out to Vegas on a whim and drop said $85K. There's a lot of it that just doesn't add up to me.
Congrats!
Outside of the actual bottom line.
On the big win! Congrats! Yeah, we'll find out more about the story, I'm sure, because like I said, you have a lot of people who are new to the space and obviously don't understand or know the questions to ask.
Yeah.
But, hey, I mean, it does make for a nice story. Hey, it's his first bet. Maybe. Anyway, he slaughtered the books, and a lot of people made big money on Tiger Woods.
Now, I don't want to cut you off. Sorry, I do want to say one thing. You want to talk about marketing? That's marketing. That would be better for Vegas. The idea that someone could fly in, drop a first bet on $85K. Talk about beginner's luck all the time.
Yeah.
I got friends that come in. Oh, I love Vegas. I had $700 on Wheel of Fortune. Like, yeah, bud. It will never happen again.
Well, the great thing is most people who read that story are not going to see the Twitter reaction. They're not going to see all the negativity.
Right.
So they're just going to see, hey, first time better, $85,000. Wow. Anyone can do this.
Exactly.
Well, we'll check in with a lot of the sportsbook people later in the week. You have to understand how much money they made the last 10, 11 years.
You're talking about on Tiger?
Yes.
Stupid money.
Yep. Because people...
Millions.
People kept betting him.
Yeah. With no real reason, too. It was free money. It was a license to print money. So you gave some of it back on Sunday. Okay.
All right, so where were you, second period, as this is Friday night, as the Golden Knights are coming unraveled? They jump out to this crazy lead. I don't know where the hell I was. I was actually going down to a concert on the Strip. I look up, and I'm like, what? 10 minutes in? Like 12 minutes in? It's 3-0.
Yeah.
This is crazy. Then like we walked from one part of the casino to another, and we're like, 3-3! What happened? So what were you thinking when it was 3-3? Considering where we are right now and how glorious yesterday was for the Golden Knights, what were you thinking second period as the Golden Knights completely squandered that lead in an instant?
Well, first of all, I feel like I was in the best place on earth for this to happen. I was at a – should I say the name? Should I not say it? I was at a particular place where you go and hit driving range balls off into targets.
So I assume it was Topgolf?
Yes, it was at Topgolf.
Yeah.
Okay. But it was a huge watch party, and there must have been at least 1,000 people on the floor I was on. So getting to hear the responses after each goal. What? You gotta be what? It was chaos, especially by the time that third one dropped, right? Then they come back to the second period. It's 3-3, and that initial goal goes in before the goaltender interference goes. All hell broke loose at Topgolf. Now I was getting my Happy Gilmore on. I was relatively calm. I was taking some swings. I was integrating the love of hockey.
Happy Gilmore.
I was integrating the love of hockey and golf. I felt very festive.
Do you love golf?
No.
I didn't know that.
Not at all.
You seem like a natural.
No. Actually, funny story. After about 20 balls, and I'm with my mom and her friends, and I'm telling them I haven't swung a club in 10 years, and I haven't played a round in 20, I take a 3-wood, and I start busting off about 20, 25 unrivaled shots, 160 yards dead center down. I was so happy with
myself.
Do
it. Grip it and rip it with a 3-wood.
Hey, I was so proud.
You said?
I was so proud of myself. 3-wood.
Okay.
Yeah. I was very...
Everyone calculating the yardage in their head.
Oh, wait, listen. 160. Yeah, 160 for me. Like, hey, 160 for me is like bowling like a 280. It might as well have been hitting like 300. Like, I'm not kidding. I was over the moon with myself. But no.
Steady and straight. He hits like a senior. Ryan McKinnell.
The atmosphere was incredible.
Putting none of his weight behind the shot.
Oh, yeah, no. I did a couple of Happy Gilmore run-ups where I took the
I'm sure Topgolf loves that.
Hell yeah, well.
As you go toppling
trust
off the
me,
freaking...
Trust me, I was the least of their problems on Friday night.
Is that right? How crazy was it?
It was nuts.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? I mean, first of all, everyone was, I guess, feeling the love that I was feeling, that merging of Happy Gilmore and hockey and golf. But no, it was packed. Each level was packed. You could barely move. It was, I can't use the word, but it was butt to elbow. It was, you couldn't move.
Really?
Yeah, it was awesome, though. To hear, and listen, I was a part of it. When that 3-3 hit, I was literally stunned. I was just like, this is very bad. This is very bad. But, you know, I'm not a big drinker. Everyone else, I would imagine, is a little bit more of a drinker than I. And the emotions were, I will just say this, running high.
Really?
High emotions.
So a lot of cussing, like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah. Oh, I heard a couple drink smash.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Table banging the table. Oh,
really?
Yeah. People were furious. It was coming unraveled. It was like the physical embodiment of all the Twitter comments I saw after game one. This team is so slow. What is going on? Oh, my God. We're not going to win. This is not the Vegas Golden Knights team I expected.
That's sports.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, I did a whole rant on both Thursday and Friday. I'm like, this team doesn't win the cup. It's a failure.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But
it's not.
Okay.
It's not. Look where they are now. Kreskin, right?
Yes,
I put the envelope to my head, and I'm like, everyone thinks that this team is good enough to win a cup. Get your crap together and do it. So how did they get their crap together on the back end of the Friday game?
Well, you know what? I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up that interference call again, because after that happens, it's supposed to be 4-3 San Jose. Now, the interference call, I think it was completely justified. Fleury gets clipped in the head. As the puck, before the puck arrives, that's an interference call. But after that, it seems like Pete DeBoer, on the bench is obsessed with it. It seems like the rest of the San Jose Sharks are obsessed with it. The only people not obsessed with it, and obviously, understandably so, the Golden Knights, who just had a ton of pressure taken off their back. For me, that entire series changed on Friday night after that interference call. This has been an entirely different series. San Jose skating a little less authoritative. Vegas skating a little more. Vegas playing a little more clean, seemingly a little less pressure off their backs. It really changed.
Vegas playing smart. San Jose not.
Yep, absolutely. And that's another thing. Bad penalties that San Jose, for the last game and a half, they have just been completely out of their element. And we're going to get into plenty more, you know, hits from Joe Thornton and fights from Ryan Reeves and all the stuff that came from yesterday, right? But the prevailing fact is this series changed after that. Because when that game was 3-3, if you were watching... If you know anything about sports, exactly.
Yep.
You know anything about sports?
Going the wrong
absolutely.
Way.
Momentum is going in an avalanche in the other direction. No pun intended, because the Avalanche are obviously still Western Conference playoff picture. Right? No, but seriously, it just felt like a completely different game. And then San Jose scores to open the second period, going up 4-3. Oh my God. The wheels are off. All hell's broken loose. They're going to be down 2-0 in this series. Are they going to get swept? Are the San Jose Sharks going to be here on Tuesday celebrating a first-round divisional win over the Vegas Golden Knights when just the last time we just saw the Knights, Alex Ovechkin was raising the Stanley Cup over his head? That's the way it felt, but that is not the way it feels right now. And I do find it interesting that from one weekend, from a Friday feeling to a Monday feeling,
it's amazing.
This entire city just got flipped on its head.
Yep. And... lots of players are responsible for that on Sunday, but man, if casual fans didn't know who Mark Stone was, they know now, because if he needed a coming out party for the masses, yesterday was his coming out party. That was ridiculous.
Finley Toyota. They'll do anything to sell you a car. No Toyota problem is too tough, too large, or too small. Keep your Toyota running like a Toyota. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Way out of his crease. Steal at center for the Knights. Back they come. Pacioretty alone in front. It's Stone. He scores! Mark Stone! Playoff hat trick!
Big weekend of recap. We'll get to Tiger Woods again here in about 15 minutes. Open the phones on that at 364-1100, 364-1100. Chrissy is here. It's Cofield. Big Mac. Well, Mark Stone was the story yesterday. That second line was the story yesterday. And that's nuts. The production from that line? Holy crap. And Stone, can I tell you the most... What do you think the most impressive thing Stone did yesterday?
I mean, kicking the game off and scoring within 15 seconds.
Okay. I thought it was the pass that led to the fourth goal. I thought that was an amazing pass.
You're talking about the cross ice...
Yeah, it was dumb.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Sick.
It was.
There are two defenders coming across. It was Stastny, right?
Yes.
Two defenders coming across, and he lays it right on the stick
through,
of Stastny.
Through, as you said.
Holy crap.
Yeah, multiple defenders.
Man.
Now, this is exactly what I said when this team
got... Do it!
Mark Stone, right? Do it! Tell him, Big Mac! No.
Do it while he's on top.
No, yeah.
Don't dislocate your shoulder.
This is called the Barry Horowitz.
Yep,
Barry Horowitz. You remember Barry?
You know what? That's the first person who's gotten that freaking reference.
Well, yeah, I'm a nerd.
Well, you throw it out there, but I throw it out there all the time. I used to love the Barry Horowitz, pat yourself on the back. Everyone else looks at me cross-eyed.
We're simpatico.
Go ahead, do it. You know what? You were the one who was all geeked up that Mark Stone came over, and they gave him the highest salary on the team, and It's one game, but it's been an amazing series for Stone so far.
Yeah, we are talking about the hat trick, obviously, yesterday, but he has been superb ever since his arrival in Vegas. And that was my sticking point with Mark Stone, is you weren't just getting a certain type of player. Now, all due respect to Max Pacioretty, his size and his ability to score, and in a large degree, I think, and you saw it last night, he might have the quickest release in the NHL. Like, his shot is deadly. And to a point, I like the Pacioretty deal, but I was a little more critical of that one in the sense that I felt there were some inconsistency issues, and the ceiling for Max, I wasn't exactly sure was worth the money that he was getting. And to a point, I'm still not entirely there sold on him. But listen, I'm not going to dump on this second line. It has been superb, and Max Pacioretty is a huge part of that, so I'm glad they are performing, right? I was somewhat critical of the Tomas Tatar trade, although I do think when that happened, I was, you know, I thought that he would fit in the system, and I still do believe that if Tatar was back here, given more time, he would be a very good player for the Golden Knights. But there was no middle ground for me with Mark Stone. I was over the moon with that deal. Number one, I had a feeling when he was coming, it wasn't the done deal when they made the trade, but I had a feeling he would be signing a long-term deal, which did happen. But my main sticking points with the arrival of Mark Stone was really two things. His ability to play two ends of the ice, he's a two-way player. His defense is incredible, and the other part of this was, and it's kind of what you were alluding to, which really set me off on all this, Mark Stone is a great scorer. We saw that last night with the three goals. You saw it with the backhand. Like, the dude can put it in places very few can. Great for you, Mark Stone. He is arguably just as good a passer. When you talk about all-around players, Mark Stone is at the top of the food chain. He's hard to game plan for. Oh, also, yeah. Another thing that I'd like to add, on top of the passing, on top of the, you know, two-way playing, the forecheck, all that, he is a physical player. Like, he will not be run over. He will put you to the boards, and he will finish his checks. There's a lot to like about Mark Stone in Vegas. You're getting a very small taste of it right now. Obviously, listen, no one's gotten – I mean, Ottawa didn't get this taste of Mark Stone, partly because he just wasn't surrounded by really good players. And what do you have to play for when you're up in Ottawa? Even if you make the playoffs, I mean, let's be honest, Ottawa isn't the most smoothly run ship, right? You were seeing him here in Las Vegas, and in his first playoff series, he's going nuclear. In a game that you kind of really needed to win, he goes out and he has a hat trick. Like, you're seeing just the beginning of what I think Mark Stone can offer this team, and that's the exciting part. I think to a large extent, and again, I'm not trying to dump on Max Pacioretty. This is not – I'm just strictly talking about ceiling. I believe that we've seen just about – and I'm talking about his career. I think he's like 27. I think we've seen just about the most that Max Pacioretty can offer an NHL team, and that's great. I think he's like on $7 million somewhere around there. He's worth it. I'm not saying he's not. But the exciting thing about Mark Stone is we're seeing the first hat trick of his career, the first hat trick in Vegas Golden Knights playoff history. But we haven't seen the ceiling for Mark Stone. This dude can get better, and that's exciting.
And I guess we have to heap some praise upon George McPhee and management, because a lot of people weren't pleased that they traded Branstrom. But after the last offseason, when, you know, they took a run at some of the big free agents, didn't get them.
Yep.
Sometimes this is what you got to do. Is to go out and trade a prospect for a guy who's got free agency coming up and use that window. Well, in this case, the window was tiny, because as soon as they got him, they signed him.
Yeah.
But target guys that you want, because you don't want to risk having to go against seven other teams to get a big free agent. And now they've got their superstar, potential superstar, to build around, and they didn't have to mess around with free agency.
And
it did cost them something, but in the Knights' case, they were set up so well in the expansion draft and had so many picks after they played the expansion draft the right way and suckered people into giving them more picks that they have extra prospects.
Look at the names you got in year two in an expansion team. Paul Stastny, Max Pacioretty, and Mark Stone. If you're an NHL fan, that's stupid. The fact that you're talking about expansion team and to some degree, free agent signing and Paul Stastny, he wanted to come here. Mark Stone also wanted to come here because, well, he had a lot of power in where he was going to go. And then he signed a long-term deal here, thus cementing the fact that he wanted to be here. That's not supposed to happen. Inaugural expansion teams are not supposed to have that sort of pull. They're not supposed to be that type of destination. They're just not. It's not the way it works in sports. So, yes, McPhee should absolutely get a ton of credit for this. And you go back to the prospects, right? Okay, you lose Nick Suzuki in the Pacioretty deal. You lose Eric Branstrom in this deal with Mark Stone. I get it. But I just mentioned two names. Bring it back. You got Max Pacioretty and Mark Stone. I really don't care how good Nick Suzuki and Eric Branstrom are. I don't care if they're future All-Stars, if one of them's a Hall of Famer. You've got two guys that are adding to this team right now, and make no mistake, for as much as I said, don't overreact after game one, pump your brakes, this is sports, be calm, there's a flip side to that levity and that rationale as a sports fan. Also recognize that the playoffs don't come around every single year. And in some cases, they don't come around for a decade or more. So it is win right now. You have put together a very good squad of talent that may not be around for, and as you raise your hand, this is your whole sticking point, right? If you don't. Right. Now, but you said win the Stanley Cup. I think a Western Conference final is a success.
No.
You're building on the success.
They have to go to the next level. Yeah, they made the finals last year. You had an offseason where you had all this money.
And the most historic
And you got you know, the whatever. You'd say that the next level down of free agents, you got a couple of good guys in Pacioretty and Stastny.
Yeah.
You made a blockbuster deal to get Stone. Win the Cup. Don't tell me that this city, Las Vegas, can't, you're laughing. I'm serious
laughing
on this.
Because last year was such a Cinderella story.
Who cares?
Story.
It's done. It's history.
But
established
you say those expectations should be the same. I don't.
They should be the same.
I don't.
They were set up in the expansion draft. They nailed it.
I don't agree with that.
Well, we'll see.
As much as others.
We'll see.
I don't think it's the reason that team
if
was
if you
successful.
Make the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Final the year before, yeah. You're expected to win the cup the next year. It's not like they were. It's not like they were dumping.
Well, it's interesting.
It's not like they're struggling financially. You laugh at that.
No, you're
dude,
right.
It's time
I'm
to be.
Laughing,
it's time to be a real hockey town.
Yeah,
be Tampa. Dare to be Tampa. Why the Lightning? Right? You think Lightning fans are like, well, you know what? Great regular season, but the puck doesn't bounce the right way sometimes. Hot goaltender. I want to, you know, puck luck. I want to hear the excuses coming out of Tampa. No, right now I'm sure Lightning fans are livid. Lightning fans are livid. What is this crap?
Well, I think Vegas fans would be too if they were down 0-3 and had 126 points in the regular season. And a lineage of winning in Stanley Cup appearances.
The point is if you're a top six team in the NHL, top seven team in the NHL, and you made the Stanley Cup final the year before, win the cup.
You're right.
That's it. It's cup or bust.
Yeah.
Let's have standards. Not this yay.
I just like how you're vaulting us into this. You're a hockey town now. Get with it.
We are.
Got expectations out, Vegas.
All I hear is the arena is the most intimidating.
You make a strong case.
These are the best fans in the league. You had a great expansion draft. You signed the entire core pretty much outside of Carlson, right? Mm-hmm. You add three big-time players, win the cup. And what we saw this weekend showed, hey, when they play their best, they can win the cup.
I think they were listening to you.
And
I think they got home and they were like, yo, we got to win this one for Steve.
Good. Someone should have given them that speech 20 games left in the season, because I don't know what was going on down the stretch.
Yeah.
Last 36 games, freaking 16-17-3 from that roster, from that team. Come on. What is going on with Tampa, by the way? What the hell happened?
We're really bordering on historic upset status here.
This is nuts.
I can speak in terms of the NHL. It's one of the greatest playoff upsets in the history of the NHL if it goes through. And then you got to start thinking about sports. You are talking in terms of I was going to make up my own word, in terms of stackness, in terms of depth, in terms of all-around play, there are very few teams better in my lifetime than what I've seen than this year's Tampa Bay Lightning. And it isn't just this year's Tampa Bay Lightning. I mean, this is pretty much the same team, albeit a little bit younger than the team that went to the Stanley Cup a few years ago. And they are regularly President Trophy contenders, being the best record in the league. They have one of the strongest blue lines in all of the NHL. They have arguably the best goaltender, one of the best goaltenders in the NHL. And you talk about offense, there is no better offensive team in the NHL. There isn't. They are the best offensive team in the NHL with arguably the best D and arguably the best goaltender. So I just want to put that in perspective. Mm-hmm. And they're down 3-0 to a hockey team from Columbus, Ohio with, you know, they got a couple of skaters in there, Duchesne, Panarin. They got some real players. Bobrovsky's a good goalie. But they should, the Tampa Bay Lightning should be wiping the ice with the Columbus Blue Jackets. And so far, because I don't want to close the casket on this series yet, they are getting their teeth kicked in.
More on the NHL playoffs in a bit. More on VGK. In the 5 o'clock hour. Today's a big day to talk about villains turned heroes and heroes turned villains. What's happening right now is fascinating in Seattle. The much beloved Russell Wilson, in a couple of hours, couple of days. I mean, if this is official that he's not going to negotiate here further with Seattle, man, that guy is going to go from the biggest hero in town to freaking hated.
You're 90 seconds away from more Cofield and Company, right here on ESPN Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
I got tingles. My hair's going up above my neck. This is sick.
Brad May excited before the game. VGK now 2-1 after a home win. What a show by the second line as Mark Stone just freaking goes crazy. What was the atmosphere like last night?
Electric. Electric.
What was a light show at the beginning?
The light show. They gave out some like some thunder sticks, essentially, that lit up. They were like little foam sticks. They were waiting in your seat. You turn them on, and they light up. It was very cool. It
looked really cool.
It was. Atmosphere-wise, no Sharks fans. When I say no,
totally shut out.
I mean, as shut out as you're going to get in a playoff game where people want to spend money and see their team. Yeah, it was limited.
Nice.
A few hundred.
That's the way it should be.
Maybe, yeah. So it was.
Did you try to fight the rest like you usually do?
Hold on. You say that's the way it should be. The best games that I have went to have been where it's 70-30, 60-40, in some cases 50-50. Because Vegas gets testy. They feel like their building is being invaded. Those other fans get loud, and Vegas gets louder. And there creates a real pride and a real back-and-forth sort of venom that I like. I actually like when we're not outnumbered, but when there's a little bit of a color in the crowd that isn't, you know, black and gold.
Was it a celebration of hockey?
Shut up.
I'm sorry I had to.
No, but you go back to the atmosphere, and you talk about a celebration of hockey. It did feel like, in a way, that this was, for the first game, I mean, that it was a little more high energy and a little more fervent than last year, in the sense that it felt like last year everyone was still in a bit of shock. Everyone was just happy to be there. Everyone was kind of looking wide-eyed and like, oh my God, look around. We're in the playoffs. How special is this? I could have never imagined. This year, it felt like, no, we belong here, and people have been telling us for a year that we lucked out on the way to the Stanley Cup and the draft and all this, and we're not legit. Okay. It felt like it was a little bit more of that back against the wall mentality, and we're going to show you. And then you get into the chippiness of the game, you get into the physicality, you get into the finishing checks, and then some of the stuff that happened throughout the game. And it definitely took a high energy turn for sure. But they were ready to go from the opening puck drop all the way through.
So Mark Stone is a hero. 61 sweaters flying off the shelves, off the racks. What do you think Seattle is thinking right now, today, on Russell Wilson, their quarterback, their hero for the last decade?
I hope, Steve, that they would be measured, rational sports fans that would appreciate the Super Bowl that Russell Wilson brought to the city of Seattle.
Okay, now answer for real.
Yeah, they're furious. You're going to turncoat traitor, take the guy that, you know, thought you loved this and you thought you loved me in this city, and now you're on your way out. What, you don't love Seattle? You don't love my Seahawks? You don't love the 12th man? Kick rocks. That's sports fans.
What do you think they should do?
Embrace him?
No. What do you think Seattle should do? What should the Seahawks be doing right now?
Trying to make Russell Wilson as happy as possible. You're not going to find anyone better. And he is a guy that not only brought you one Super Bowl, but is capable of bringing you another one. And I'm not sure there's someone else out there that can do that for you.
Well, the discussion now is, can you win a Super Bowl with your quarterback making $28, $30, $32, $34 million a year?
Can you make a Super Bowl with your quarterback making $400,000 a year like Mitch Trubisky? I don't know what the way is.
Well, you can, because Russell Wilson did.
Right.
A lot of people around Seattle,
I'm saying, if you're a front office, if you're a Seattle Seahawks fan, what do you want? What would you feel more comfortable in? I want the branded Seattle Seahawk. I want Russell Wilson. I want the guy who is woven into the fabric of my city and is still very much in his prime.
I'm torn.
Yeah?
I'm torn on this one because, boy, if I'm Seattle, I might get rid of him. I don't know that I can build a winner with him making $30, $32, $34 million a year.
Well, I will say this. I talk about the 12th man.
Mm-hmm.
If there is one city that is going to look past that, if you're front office and you do that and you say, hey, listen, we're going to make a real risky decision here and we're going to pass on a guy that is not only our franchise of the last 10 years, but, you know, Russell Wilson's the type of player and the type of guy with what he's done is he's a statue player, right? Like, he's a guy you put out in front of the building.
After this? Well, today, he's not a statue player.
That's kind of my point, right?
I'm not negotiating anymore. Tax day is my deadline. And when I mean I'm not negotiating, not negotiating anymore, I mean this is it, and I'm not talking to you, period, and I'm going to free agency.
Yeah. It's a business, man.
So there's a couple things here. Yeah. Let me finish what I was saying about Seattle. So I'm torn. I don't believe the Seattle folks believe in the model of having a $30, $32, $34 million quarterback. But I do believe that if the trade partner were the Giants need to pay Russell Wilson $30, $32, $34
million. It's a situational thing. And that's where I was getting back to the 12th man.
Well, explain it. Why?
Well, if any Seattle, if any team would support this happening, or you could not worry, if you could have that pressure as a GM or a front office member, mm-hmm. to have that pressure removed from you on some level, dealing with Seattle is great because you know they're going to show up. They are one of the most dedicated
I think the fans, most of the fans will have John Schneider and Pete Carroll's back in the short term. If it turns into multiple four-win seasons and, you know, they're doing John Elway quarterback derby, then that's not going to work. But what do you... Explain to the audience what I'm talking about with the situations being different between Seattle and the Giants.
Well,
how about I do it? So, I trust John Schneider and I trust Pete Carroll to go out and find a bridge quarterback and then also draft that next quarterback. And it might not be this year. Might not be this year. Maybe it's next year. But I trust those guys to do it, and I think they can win with defense and a running game. They've done it before. I don't trust the Giants. I think Dave Gettleman headed up, you know, that organization by John Mara, the owner. I think they're incompetent. So I think at this point, there are a lot of people out there, including Adam Candy, who's, you know, does the show every once in a while and is a Giants fan. And I've seen some New York media people say this, that there's no way you can trade two number one picks because that's what they want. They'd want a couple of ones. This year's one, next year's one. This year's one's the six. Next year's one. Who knows? If you get Russell Wilson as a Giants, I would hope you'd finish in the top half of the league. Well, so next year's one will be in outside of the top 15. So you're giving up the six and, I don't know, the 17 next year. I have zero confidence that Gettleman is going to nail the draft. I have zero confidence that they're going to figure out, the quarterback situation. They already have not made the move on Eli Manning, so I don't know where their philosophies are from a quarterback standpoint. And now the touche to that would be, wait, so you say you can't win with a $30 million quarterback. You think this guy's going to find a way to win with a $30 million quarterback? I don't know. I don't know if Gettleman can do it. I don't know if John Mara can do it. But I don't see their quarterback fix on the horizon. And for the Giants, yeah, I would trade for Russell Wilson. For Seattle, I would get rid of Russell Wilson. I know it sounds completely confusing, but I hope I explained it. That one organization is competent right now, one is not at all from a management standpoint.
Well, I also look at the pieces that they have to deal with, right? Like, if you're the New York Giants, we talked about contracts and rookie contracts, right? You have Saquon Barkley on a rookie contract. Mm-hmm. That helps. You just dropped OBJ.
Yep.
That helps.
So they have money.
They have money, but they also have the ability, maybe, I don't want to say win now, but you talked about draft picks, right? You got the sixth pick this year. Conceivably, what New York needs most, and I'm not breaking any new ground here, is they need a quarterback. That's not going to happen this year. There's not anyone that you're over the moon about this year. Next year is that draft. And as you said, you don't know where your placement's going to be. If you can get a competent quarterback, not just a competent quarterback, but a Super Bowl level all-pro quarterback right now who is not busted, there's no sign of injury or decline in regards to that, yeah, you go out and you pay him. Flip side of that is, you know, Seattle. I do feel a bit of this. I hate to use the word entitlement, but it does feel like a little bit that maybe Russell's overplaying his hand a little bit in the sense that...
I don't think so.
No?
To me, this is a watershed moment in the NFL.
Hmm.
I guess he could be running the risk. No, he's not. This could be a watershed moment. This is something Colin Cowherd talks about all the time, and he addressed it with Aaron Rodgers. He's like, why don't these quarterbacks just play it out to free agency and see what happens? Go to a place you want to be. Go to the best football situation and get the most money. Why would you stay around? Now, in the end, Rodgers was around for a change at GM and now a change at coach. So I think he got what he wanted. But why stay in a situation that you're not in love with? Go and test the market. And guess what? Seattle can sign him back, can't they?
They can.
If you go to free agency, yeah. Seattle could sign him back.
Do you really think someone would give Russell Wilson $30 million
yes.
if he was a free agent? Okay.
Really? You don't think so?
It's a lot of money, man.
It is.
He's not getting any younger.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's a big thing to keep in mind.
Yeah, there's no market for a guy like for $30 million now. No. Kirk Cousins got 28 guaranteed a year for 3 years. There's no market.
I'm catching the sarcasm.
I feel it.
There's a market. There's a market, believe me. Because I saw USA Today wrote a story today about kind of suggesting your thing with, yeah, with Wilson. Maybe he's overplaying his hand. Maybe the NFL, the entire NFL is going to come to the realization that you got to have a mid-level or cheaper quarterback, yeah, salary-wise to win. The entire NFL is not there yet.
What's your counter to that? Just that they're not there yet?
No. There's still half the league or two-thirds of the league is like, you know what, we're going to find a way to make it work with a top-10 quarterback, and he's going to make top-10 money, which is $25 to $34 million a year. The Packers weren't there. They didn't tell Aaron Rodgers to hit the bricks. No, there are teams out there. Because this, you know, the thing is, people will point to Moneyball. Right. It's not baseball.
No, it's
baseball has a gigantic roster. Is there one person on a baseball roster that you have to have? You can't win without them? No, there really isn't. Football, I mean, you go through Super Bowl history, the winners, how many average to below average quarterbacks have won a Super Bowl? I mean, we're talking freaking...
A lot. No.
We're talking 5 out of 50 plus?
Really? I never actually thought about that, but my immediate reaction was a lot, and yours was no. So I think Mark Rippon. I think Joe Flacco. I mean... I haven't got into the list.
You'll get to about 5.
Ken Stabler.
Nah, that's now you're going to get kicked in the face.
Why? Because
People will kill you on that.
Okay.
Ken Stabler is an average quarterback. Come on,
average.
Now. Wait, what?
I put him in Flacco.
No. Oh no.
I don't have the numbers in front of me. Feels about right. 4,000 yards here, 37 here. You know, whatever.
That's not
anyway,
a whatever.
I would actually have to look at it. So, I think it's interesting.
Go back and look at Super Bowl winners, yeah, and look at quarterbacks where you're like,
Peyton Manning with the Broncos.
No.
He was average as hell.
He was still an above average quarterback who can make plays. I'm talking freaking the Trent Dilfers of the world.
Okay, there you
there
go.
Are
so
like,
ripping Trent.
It's less than 10%.
Flacco. Okay, I'll give you that.
Try it during the break.
All right.
Seriously.
I will look it up. Okay. All right.
On the way back, we're going to get to Tiger Woods. Today is a big day for villains to heroes and heroes to villains. I've always been on Team Tiger. I'm like, at this point, even I'm a little uncomfortable with how schmaltzy this thing has gotten.
Join the conversation on Twitter at ESPN Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
The return to glory.
For Shizzle.
He did it. Tiger Woods did it. Took a long time to get back on top of the mountain, but the return to glory, according to Jim Nantz, call there on CBS. 364-1100, 364-1100. You know, we usually don't go with your stock questions, but on this show. But I'm going to throw it out there because I was actually trying to think of, and I'm like warped right now, stuck in what have you done for me lately? What is the greatest athlete comeback we've ever seen? Like I was thinking before the show, normally I can immediately shoot down, you know, prisoner of the moment theory and go, all right, here's 15 examples. Give us some examples. Who tops Tiger in what he just did? 11 years is a long time. 364-1100, 364-1100. You guys and gals have all been watching sports for a long time. You've seen some great, we're not talking in an event. It's an athlete coming back from the depths. And we're not talking about someone who never achieved on the front end. We're talking achieved on the front end, career is on life support, then comes back to the top of the mountain. 364-1100, 364-1100. Again, I don't want to be stuck in prisoner of the moment, but it is pretty amazing. And I think some of us, and I'll admit I'm one of them, I don't even know that I absorbed like how bad it was for Tiger Woods, because I think I pushed back when people kept saying, hey, the comeback is here. I pushed back so much on the comeback being possible because I also didn't think that, this is going to sound weird, I didn't think his lows were that low, but they were pretty low. I mean, his body was jacked up. He obviously screwed up his marriage. Should have never got married, right? Well, or had an agreement. You know, you want to fornicate with 20 women a year, more than that probably. You want to juggle all this, then you got to have an agreement with your wife. So lost his family. Then it looks like he's a freaking pill-popping addict, right? He's a mess that way. His golf blew. But there was always a small part of me that's like, hey, you know what? The guy's one of the greatest of all time. Of course he's going to come back. But what we forget are so many athletes who have a devastating injury or problems away from the field or the court, and they never come back. There's so many failed attempts like this for Tiger to do it, and now at 43, it's pretty amazing. And now we're going to show you or talk about bets later on. Like, how many majors can he win? Like, pump the brakes a little bit. But on the greatest athlete comebacks ever, who else is up there? 364-1100, 364-1100. Steve is up with Cofield & Company. Hey, Steve.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good, Steve. How you doing?
Good. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from Tiger and golf, but what it kind of gets under my skin a little bit is the athlete comparison. You know, in my opinion, it's like the lowest form of an athlete. It's like saying a bowler or a poker player is an athlete. You know what I mean?
I would actually argue that a bowler is more physically gifted, but go ahead.
No, but that's my point about the end. Again, not taking any away from Tiger and golf. I'm obviously, what he did was amazing.
Right.
But again, this is not like some guy coming back and winning a boxing event or a quarterback coming back from an injury. I mean, my back bothers me too, but I could still swing a golf club. I can't guard a wideout, you know, from a corner position.
Okay. So your premise right off the bat is Tiger as an athlete is a little miscast. But in sports history, who's the person you hold up and you're like, I cannot believe they came back?
Oh, it's a good question. I can't think of one off the top of my head. I was just calling to get my opinion about that. But thanks, guys.
All right. All right. So Steve leaves the door open. 364-1100, 364-1100. Brett is up. Hey, Brett.
Hey, what's up, Cofield? Love you guys, man. First time caller.
Thank you. Who do you have?
Muhammad Ali.
Okay, why?
In 1964, he beats a guy that most people consider to be absolutely unbeatable, gets his title stripped, is prosecuted by the government for draft dodging, then comes back 10 years after the fact and does the exact same thing when he beats George Foreman in Africa. I don't see how anybody can compare to that.
Okay. What do you think?
Oh, it's up there. And there's another boxer up there that I would – I only had three. I actually didn't have Ali on my list, so I would
you
add
didn't.
That. No, I didn't. But I had another boxer on my list. And, yeah, I just real
who's
quick,
the other boxer?
George Foreman. Coming back at mid-40, whatever yeah. it was, to recapture.
He did it! He did it!
Over Michael Moore to recapture the heavyweight title at his age. I knew George Foreman as a grill guy. I knew George Foreman as George. Like, I knew he was a gimmick. Like, he was this eccentric character with the big bald head,
this
and then he was bludgeoning people to death.
Is also amazing, because this is part of the story. So, for Ryan McKinnell, he wasn't... I'm going to use the term familiar, right? You weren't around for
exactly
the rope-a-dope. Then he is a whole different character. Then he comes back as an old man and is knocking out Michael Moore. You do realize we're old, so we can't partake in this part of it. But you do realize there's a ton of kids, even young adults, who are like 15 to 22, and they're like, who? What? What did Tiger do? Like, this is the first time they've seen him be awesome.
Yep.
But that they can remember.
Yep. And that's why we're here to contextualize just how amazing this is. And we're talking about the comeback. You talked about the infidelity. The infidelity in that fall, that was mentally, it was whatever. You had to deal with some bullying or critique online or, you know, the shame of it. Right? No.
Right, he was, if
he,
you
he was
have,
the butt of every joke.
He was one
on
of
SNL.
The most hated
yes.
five athletes in the world, women especially,
yep.
hated Tiger Woods' guts. That's why yesterday was so amazing.
Yeah.
That you go, Tiger, Tiger, Tiger.
And I was
this
one
guy,
of them.
This guy was one of the worst adulterers we've ever seen.
Here's one for you.
In sports history. On top of that, also a jerk to a lot of people. And to come full circle and win at 43 and actually get love from the majority of the crowd was amazing.
I got something for you from Uberfax. Dr. Seuss cheated on his first wife, who had cancer at the time. After finding out about the affair, she took her own life. Then he went on to marry his mistress. My point with that being is...
So he's like Lance Armstrong.
That was Dr.
Except
Seuss.
For the suicide.
That was Dr. Seuss. Right. When you were Dr. Seuss, you don't remember that he left his wife with cancer and then
right,
went
well,
on to...
We didn't have social media. Imagine if Dr. Seuss was around now with social media, how insane that would be.
Hey, my point is sometimes, you know, your legacy can be bigger than cheating. Cheating is something that every family deals with and is a part of American life. That's why 50% of all marriages end in divorce. It's one of the reasons.
Let me ask you this then. Why do we go through the dog and pony show on the front end? Why don't we just say that? Because I know I was on Team Tiger the entire time. I joke
now,
all the time.
Now, there's the question.
No, I joke all
no,
the time.
No, it's the question because I was on the other end.
I joke all the time about having a Super 6, and it's generally it's the most hated athletes. It's always been A-Rod. Tiger is always part of the list. LeVar Ball, come on, LeVar. You're holding on by a freaking string here. But it's generally because I want to push back against hypocrisy because I know what's going to happen.
And you were right.
If the person was liked and they fall, whatever fault they have that a lot of you have, you people out there are doinking on their side like crazy. Keep your wiener in your pants. Close your legs, ladies. And then you have the temerity to sit there and go, Tiger Woods, evil. And I know what's going to happen. They're going to come back and win. And then he's a hero again because we're so freaking fixated on, well, we just are short attention span.
Hey, let me ask you a question then. That moment for me was Sunday, where I was forced to sit there.
That was it?
No, I'm dead serious.
I'm back, baby.
No. Where I realized how bad of a sports fan I was for the prior 15 years.
Yeah.
I didn't have that. I didn't have that foresight and that to look back and be like, man, you know, I better not overreact to this Ellen smashing his windows out with a golf club and laughing that he said he was more Bone Thugs and Harmony than he was family or whatever the quote was, right? I was rolling and laughing at Tiger Woods for the last 15 years. Sunday, I'm crying. I'm not really. I mean, I teared up maybe a little bit, wipe away with a bed sheet, whatever, right? But I'm sitting there enjoying the redemption story of Tiger Woods while fully knowing that I have no reason that enjoyment because 10 years ago, I was laying it on so thick and basking in the glory of his failure.
Hypocrite.
Absolutely. Hypocrite. Now, my question to you is, when did you realize that you were a hypocritical sports fan? There had to have been a moment because you couldn't always known that. There had to have been some moment back in your childhood or your teens or your 20s where you were realized, you know what, I was a bad sports fan and I don't want to be that anymore.
We'll answer that, but let's stick on the topic because that is a good question too. 364-1100, greatest athlete comeback stories in history. I know it's been played out all over the place, but I really haven't heard great cases. Ali is certainly up there. 364-1100, greatest athlete comebacks in history. Tiger Woods has got to be top three or four all time. And man, for folks my age and older, like generally these topics you can crush instantly. I cannot crush this one and say, hey, Tiger does not deserve to be in the mix.
Cofield and Company will be back in 90 seconds. Keep it here on ESPN Las Vegas.